Okay, we're going to start a new topic tonight. We're going to start the topic of Tzvilas Kelim. I was just commenting to the three of you that Tzvilas Kelim is one of the more commonly asked shilos that that I get, issues relating to Tzvilas Kelim. And unlike other areas of halacha, most of the time when I would give a series of shiurim on, let's say, Hilchos Mida or Kashrus in general, no matter how thorough the series was, were to be, one would still have to ask a shayla. When it comes to Tzvilas Kelim, usually it's a matter of just knowing the facts. It's not that complicated to deal with most of the issues on your own. Every once in a while, a shayla comes up that requires looking further into. But generally, it's an issue of rules, and that's why in many Kelim mitzvahos, they have rules typed up and posted on the wall. The thing is that sometimes the rules, of one posek don't match the rules of another posek, and some of these things are following in a certain Minnesota and a certain way of approaching things. So I will try to give as well-rounded an approach to most issues as I possibly can. But having said that, the maskanos are going to be biased toward my Minnesota from my rebellion. So just to buyer beware that's what we're getting into. Before we even discuss the issue of Tzvilas Kelim, the first question we have to deal with on any mitzvah when it comes to any particular halakha is, are we dealing with the din d'oraisa or are we dealing with the din d'rabbanan? So this is not as clear-cut as one may think. The pasukim b'midbar perek lamedaleth pasuk chaf gimel by Klei Midyan, Klali Yisrael went to war, and we have all these kelim that we're able to confiscate, that we're able to take as booty for ourselves, and obviously the Torah tells us now you have to kashrut the kelim, and that's the source for kashruting the kelim of Liglin and Hagala, and all the different halakhos relating to kashruting kelim, much more complicated topic than Tzvilas Kelim. And then it says something else. It says, Kol Asher, Kol Dover, in source number one, Kol Dover Asher Yavu Be'ish Ta'aviru Be'ish V'Tater. Right? That whatever was used with normal fire, so you should pass it through the fire to kasher it, probably referring to Liban, right? Anything that cooks with direct contact to the fire requires a very intense form of kashering. And then V'Tater. There's an additional form of tahara that has to be done. So the Mishnah and the Sechs of Avodah Zarah, toward the very end of Avodah Zarah, Dafayin Hei on the Beis, source number two, Halokeh Kli Pashrish Menal of the Kochavim, not only if you win a war, but if someone purchases Kalim from non-Jew, Es Shedarko Lahatvil Yatvil Lahagil Yadvil Lavin Ba'ar Yilavin Ba'ar. You have to do whatever you have to do to make sure that Kli becomes usable. And the Mishnah refers to Tvila as well as Hagalah and Ibn. Hagalah and Ibn, obviously, well-known forms of kashering kelim. Mishnah refers to tvila as well. The Gemara starts out in comments. The kind of the kulam tshichim tvila barbaimsa. All kelim that are purchased from a non-Jew have to be toveled in 40 sa in the kasher mikvah. And the Gemara quotes, how do I know this? Minan emili da'amakra kol davar asher yavu ve'esh tavir ve'esh v'taher. In Rashi comments, in source number 3, kra yiseiruhu hai v'taher. This word v'taher is an extra word in the pasuk, completely unnecessary, and therefore it's coming to tell me that there's a chiyuv of tvilas kelim. Pashut pshat, Rashi says in the Gemara, tvilas kelim is a din d'oraisa. We often think of it as something that's not so important. For whatever reason, apparently up until the last decade or two, in America, tvilas kelim was largely ignored. It was you could go to someone's house, apparently, you can go to someone's house and trust their kashrus 100% and have major sveikos whether they have ever heard of Tzvilas Kelim or ever taken it seriously, certainly whether they've actually toveled their Kelim. Nowadays, it's sort of re-emerged on the scene as a halakha that people are more masked about, but it seems that just from the way the postmen speak, and from what I've heard from my rebbeim, that it used to be Meisim B'chol Yom, they get the Shaila. I trust the person's kashrus, there's no way they're doing Tzvilas Kelim. You don't get it as much anymore, but still we're going to see, obviously, there are a lot of practical elements to the shir. So whenever you deal with any Shaila, the first thing you need to know is Daraisa Drabanan. Rashi says Daraisa. If you look at the Rambam is not as clear. Rambam in source number 5, Tzvilu zu shematzvilin koya su'udan okachim in ha'akum. This tvila that we do, that we tovel these kelim that we buy from a non-Jew, va'achakach yutzu la'achilu v'shtia, and afterwards they become mutzer to eat with and to drink with, This is not an issue of Tumatara, it's rather Midivrei Sofrim. Sounds pretty clear from the Rambam, we're dealing with Edin Drabanan over here. The Rambam obviously would understand Vitaher to be an Atzvach for the Alma, not to be literally Edin Daraisa, not really an extra word in the Pasuk, but simply an Atzvach that we're dealing with Edin Drabanan. Having said that, and even though that's the way almost everybody understands the Rambam, the Tshuvas HaRashba and a few others think that the Rambam holds Tfilos Kelim is Daraisa. The Rashba develops a thesis in a couple of places and contradicts this thesis in a couple of other places. We're not going to get into it right now, that when the Rambam says Midivrei Sofrim, he very often does not mean Midrabanan, very often means something that the Rabbanan had to point out to us because it wasn't Mufurish in the Pasuk, but is in fact a Dindaraisa. So that's what the Tshuvas HaRashba writes. The Shaul had asked him a question about Tfilos Kelim and had assumed in the question that clearly we're only talking about Adin Drabanan, and the Rashba says, no, Masha Amarta Shetfilos Kelim is Divrei Sofrim, locally on the Modim, though. Don't think everyone agrees that Tfilos Kelim is Adin Drabanan. When we give a Rambam Bel Yerishu, who suffers from Midaraisa? In fact, from the Rambam, it sounds that he also says Adin Daraisa. Upashta Dishraisa Shili Abel Dazara, how can Rashba say? And the Pashat Sugi on the Sephas Abel Dazara that discusses Tfilos Kelim strongly indicates that we're dealing with a Din D'Oraisa, that we're not dealing with a Din D'Rabbanan. So it seems pretty clear that there is a Machlokes in the Rishonim. However, the Yeshiva that holds Tfilos Kelim D'Oraisa seems to have an upper hand. There are dozens of Rishonim that comment on it, that take sides in it. It's hard to, you know, some folks can assume that Rogue Rishonim holds Tfilos Kelim D'Oraisa, others assume Rogue Rishonim holds Tfilos Kelim D'Rabbanan. Of course, it depends on it, which Rishonim you count. Right, some Rishonim count more than others when it comes to making majorities. In general, our Derech HaPsak is not necessarily trying to figure out what the majority of Rishonim are. You can always find another Rishonim that says something. It obviously matters a great deal what the major Rishonim held. That's why the Beit Yosef, when he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, when he was passing Halacha, it wasn't based on the robe Rishonim, it was based on the robe of a very select group of three Rishonim. But anyway, that's the issue of Tfilos Kelim D'Rabbanan D'Oraisa. The question is, well, my nafkamina, whether it's Din D'Rabbanan D'Oraisa. So the first thing you always think of, nafkamina, whether something's D'Rabbanan D'Oraisa, is Safek, right? Safek D'Rabbanan Kula, Safek D'Oraisa L'Chomna. So one would think, any time you have a Shaila in Tfilos Kelim, we should always automatically say that if it's D'Oraisa or not, if it's D'Rabbanan, we can be Mekel. However, it is not so possible that we can do that. There is a concept in Halacha called the Davar Sheyesh Lo Matirin. That's something that anyway is the Gemara and Beit Tadav Gimel Amud Beis, and Machlokes Rishonim over there, how exactly to explain this, but essentially the concept is that something that's going to become mutter, or can easily become mutter, after a short period of time, we don't rely on Tzvekos. We don't rely on the Tzvekos Rabban Mekula. We wait to make it mutter. I mean, Tzvekos Rabban Mekula is a way of saying that I don't know what to do, so I'm going to rely and assume that I can be Mekul. But you don't have to make that assumption. You'll be able to use it anyway. You have nothing to lose. Just wait a little more. Do something. Make it okay. So then we have the responsibility to make sure to see to it that it be taken care of. So that's why it's not so possible to apply Tzvekos. So what's the nafkamina? If you can't apply the nafkamina of Sadat Rabban Kula, Sadat Raisa Lusumma, so the nafkamina that appears in Halacha, in Shulchan Aruch itself, is a nafkamina that's presented by the Trumas Hadashen. Trumas Hadashen is source number 7, and this is very much the Maisa. So I see where it is. The Trumas Hadashen was asked the following shaila. Source number 7, Kli Machlos Alekoach Min HaNachri Shet Tzarek Tzvila Shari L'Sholchar Yidei Katan L'Tzvila Lo. Can you send a kid to do the Tzvila Kelim for you? Is that mutter to have a child do Tzvila Kelim? So what does this issue depend on? It says, Shul Sedeshen, Yerod Olo Shari L'Mavr Hafi Kiva the Tzvila Kelim Alekoach Min HaNachri Do Right Tzvi Lo Mehamina Lo L'Katan. Halacha is, says Shulman Sedeshen, you're allowed to trust the Katan for a Din D'Rabbanan, you're not allowed to trust the Katan for Din D'Oraisa. I know there's a tshuva discussing sending a Katan for Mishloach Manos, right, whether you can trust him that the Chazak of Shliach Chos Shliach Huso applies to the Katan. That plays into this issue as well a little bit. But by when it comes to Tzivos Kelim, if it's Rabban, you can trust the Chatan. If it's not Rabban, it's the Raisa, you're not allowed to trust the Chatan. He says, Af al gav to the Yodel who milfus los bekarera, people are completely in the Chatan's power to do this feel and no one's stopping him. And it's not that big a deal to do this feel unless there are those really annoying stickers that you can't get off of the nail box. But other than those circumstances where it's there face up and the whole world is at the Kelim, but other than those circumstances, not that big a deal to do this feel Kelim. See, the Ruch Patel's paratomic of Pesach and my Tosfos that we learned in the Gemara in Shabbat afternoon points out that Chabad the Ka'amar had no Rabban the Rabbanon, that that which we say that the Rabbanon trust women on being the Rabbanon, he says the Dafka Nashim Va'avadim Naktua Tosfos to me, I'm not even to the Raisa Avalot Tanim. And only Nashim and Avadim are sometimes believed on this as a Raisa when it doesn't involve a major Tirka. Tanim, I never believed on Dinda Oraisa. So he says, it would seem to me that you cannot trust the Chatan because it's Dinda Skelim on his own because he's not believed on Dinda Oraisa. Shulman Sadeh then goes on to say that's to do it on his own. You can watch him, have him there, have him help you, and that would be okay. Meaning if you're Omed Al Gadov, then it's not that the Chatan lacks the wherewithal to do a proper Tvila. It's that the Chatan doesn't have ne'emanos that he did the proper tefillah. If you have knowledge, definitive knowledge that he did the tefillah, someone, another adult saw him do it, was there with him, then certainly it's okay if he did the whole thing. That's perfectly fine. If the kelim fell into the mikvah, it's a proper tefillah. But there's no din in kavana in das when it comes to the tefillah. There is a discussion with the Gemara by a woman. Right, if a woman falls into the mikvah, whether she's in the Paris Levaila or not, whether you need Kavana to be Messiah or her Levaila. But when it comes to Tzimut Kelim, the assumption is, and Shulchan Aruch discusses this, we have time to look later when we don't have time to get into all the issues, he discusses this a little bit, that when it comes to Tzimut Kelim, we don't have such a concept that you need any sort of Kavana. All you need is to know that the Chatan knows what he's doing. And he suggests that maybe you don't even need, for that element, you don't even need a Gadol Omid Al-Gadol. You don't even need a Gadol Sam Nefim to know what he's doing. You just have to tell him what to do. But to believe him about what he did, that you need an eyewitness. You need someone other than the Chatan to tell you what he did regarding the Tzvi Kelim. So that's actually Chatan in Shulchan Aruch, not to send the Chatan to do Tzvi Kelim. Now, it would come out, though, according to the Shulchan Aruch, that if you have things that only require to give him the Rabbanon, right, and even if we know the concept of Tzvi Kelim is Midaraisa, we'll see soon, that's only certain utensils, certain materials are chayiv in Tzvi Kelim Midaraisa. So there are many, many things that we are knowing to be kavod, someone knows to kavod a lot of other things, but many things that even I'm known to be kavod that are only chayiv in Tzvi Kelim Midaraisa, that aren't chayiv in Tzvi Kelim Midaraisa. Perhaps most things, glasses, something like that, you can send with the Chatan to do the Tzvi Kelim. So that's the basic nafkamina. Now, the idea behind Tzvi Kelim is somewhat vague. Yerushalmi makes a comment that's quoted by all the poskim, quoted on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. It's something that normally we would think would have significance, but the Nosei Kelim discussed it to a great extent. Yerushalmi says the idea of Tzvi Kelim is that just as a guy who's being a guy there in entering Kedushat Yisrael needs Tevila the Mikvah, so too the Kelim that are entering Kedushat Yisrael require Tevila the Mikvah. Now it's ironic because the Kelim, when they belong to the guy, you're allowed to use them. Right? They don't require Tevila so long as they belong to the guy. But once they enter the Rishut of Yisrael, so they're entering the Kedushat Yisrael, and they require Tevila the Mikvah, which leads to the question that the Poskim struggle with, the later Poskim struggle with, is a guy who is misguided, what about all of his kelim? Right, let's say a guy who becomes a ger, so he kashes all of his kelim, right? Now they're all kosher. Does he have to do tevila on all of his kelim? Does he require tevila, kelim, and everything? Normally, if something transfers from Akum to Kedush, from non-Jews to Kedushas Yisrael, right, that's the concept that should require, one would think, Yilas Kalim, these Kalim have now transferred into Kedushas Yisrael. So that's the Avshak Lewis quote that can't find the source that says it. So he quotes, I think, from one of the Rishonim that had such a comment, that when the guy is, that has a comment that the Tzvila that you do for the guy himself, who's being the guy here, is also Lola Kalim. It works for his Kalim as well, which is a little bit hard to understand. What does that mean, it works for his Kalim? It's obviously, it doesn't sound like a halach statement. It sounds like a way of saying that he's puffed from Tevilas Kehilim. But the question then is why? And another side question, which I'm not going to be able to answer necessarily, is why none of the Poskim discussed it until a couple of hundred years ago? Meaning this is not in Shulchan Aruch, it's not in the Rishonim. They don't really discuss, except for this one Rishon I can't find, except these place, but the Poskim generally don't discuss the issue of what happens when by Gershon Schneider, when there's a requirement of Tevilas Kehilim. The earliest source I know that you have, the source number 14, the Zakei Tshuva, raises the issue. And he says, that which we say the reason of Tevilas Kehilim is to leave the Tumas Akum, I am the sake of the Tevilas Kehilim, raised to use that, Shaman al-Metzah, those things that are near that, the Gershon is Gaier, Kol Kehilim, Shrikum Tevilas. That's how Lacha Gershon is Gaier would have to be equal to all the Kehilim. The Zayin Shem Mashakas of the Zev, he niyach the Tarafim, Shalom Nimsa the Poskim Din Zev. He hasn't found any of the Poskim that discuss this issue, but only his owner, Shum Mechaber the Zev. And none of the authors of any of the earliest forum have discussed this problem. Very difficult to understand how people could ignore such a basic and seemingly common issue, right? They're gave them all the time, except for in Saudi countries, many have a minute that they're not Makabal any Gerim, but generally in most societies they're Gerim all the time. So what would be the svara to say that a Gerish in this guy doesn't need to be less Gerim? Why is it even a suffix? So perhaps the svara is as follows. Maybe the fear of Tevilas Kehilim is not generated only by the transference from non-Kedushas Yisrael to Kedushas Yisrael. Maybe it's a Maisa Kinyan, it's an act of acquisition that creates a Chiyuv of Tevilas Kehilim. If there was no Kinyan, if there was no acquisition that was done, there was no formal Kinyan from the guy to the Jew, so it could be that there's no Din of Tevilas Kehilim. Well, where else would you have such a concept that there's no act of Kinyan from the Jew to the guy when you would have an issue of Tevilas Kehilim? So a very fascinating application of this, they found in the Tshuvas of the Heart Sea. The Chief Case of France in source number 15 asks the following shot. I don't know which war this was dealing with, but you know the Torah talks about wars and Tanakh talks about wars. We have all these issues that came up in the wars, and for so many years it was so not Nogaya to us because we didn't have any wars. But now since the Hakamas and Medina, when there are Jewish soldiers fighting wars for the Jewish homeland, so you have all of these shilohs come back, all these issues of war. So the Torah talks about the whole of the Torah, Tevilas Kehilim, was really centered on the war. Right? Now the shiloh comes up. You win a war, you capture some land back, hasn't happened in a while, you get some land back, and you find a factory that produces Kehilim, and it's not Kehilim, they're brand new, never been used. Right? So what do you do? Do they require Tevilas Kehilim, do they not require Tevilas Kehilim? There's two places of faith of that. Kehilim should not only be Tzahal. In Chayyam Tzila, are they fighting Tzila? He says, Zekitech Hashanim Avru Miyom, Asher Zafinu Lirus Kaste Hashem Yisparat, Sherov Arsenu Atagosha Nifkushom Yaragayim, that most of our city has been taken back from the non-Jews, it's been 9 years, Ubitov Shlal Ha'oyev Nafku Biyat Tzvah HaGanal Yisrael, and amongst the booty that we've been able to take from the enemy, we've been able to get for the army, has been able to get Harbet Kleis Uda Kadoshim Gam Yishanim. Many places, Uda, new ones and old ones, Shehuk Shuv HaGalo Belivun, that have been cashed with HaGalo Belivun, Vashayil Abayim Uchiyachim Betzila Kitin Kona Kleis Uda Kusu Uda Me'anafi. So is it Chayez and Tzila like someone who would buy a place to Uda? And notice that term place to Uda is going to keep coming up. Not all Kalim are Chayez and Tzila. We'll hopefully get to this next week. Only Kalim that can be referred to as place to Uda used for the meal, which we'll discuss next week, Mr. Hashem, what fits into that category, are Chayez and Tzila. It says, Rabu Adeus Pena Morim, and there are a lot of different folks that have what to say about this. V'yeshah within the kibbutz shalom nirshmi emet sadr shalom shalos Yisrael mishanos pesach habaylus shal aravim. So this I didn't understand. Someone can explain this to me. I appreciate it. He says that some say because the Jewish government, the Israeli government, doesn't want to change the baylus of the Arabs, v'aruchush rashim b'toras mitkadim eruchush ha'oyev. Instead of listing these items in terms of, I guess, for listing what assets the government has, they list this as Arab money. as opposed to Jewish money that they've now received. What? They would have to invest. Is that? Yeah, that's fine. They would have to. Yeah, but any war, an Arab nation attacks Israel, and we happen to win, and we happen to get, we have to pay back whatever we catch. That's true. I don't know if you have not. What?
We're giving them back
to them. Yeah, I know. But I'm just wondering, because the Israeli government is very hesitant to call this Jewish Kalim. They call it Arab Kalim. We're using it, we have it, we do whatever we want with it, but it has the shame Arab Kalim, because maybe we'll say Ain Ha Kalim Halal was tied to the Tila, maybe they're not tied to the Tila because of that.
Because they didn't annex those kind of annexable lands, they didn't get back to the same, they didn't officially say it's ours, they said it's captured territory, or
captured territory. Oh,
it's territory. Like okay. There weren't
okay. So he says, so because of that legal technicality, because of that legal technicality, some of the postmen wanted to say that they're not chayav in tefillah. It's like borrowing kelim from a non-Jew. Not only are they not chayav in tefillah, you can't do tefillah. It won't work. I mean, let's say I take a guy's kli and I bring it to the mikvah, and then I buy it from him. I'll take it to the mikvah again. It didn't work when I brought it to the mikvah. It has to first become mine, and then I can bring it to the mikvah. Right? So that's what some people wanted to suggest. So, Rashid Frank says, I don't buy that. He says, I don't care what they label it. Are the Jews using it? Is there any guy that could possibly reclaim it? The Jews have it. They're using it. And no one could possibly reclaim it. Practically speaking, they want to label it whatever they want to label it. These are obviously halakhically Jewish kelim. According to halakha, what you capture in war is yours. You don't have to worry about making nice with names. He says he doesn't buy any of this. But he says that when it comes to the mitzvah of tefillah, there's a major question that comes up that teaches us a big chiddush in halacha. And this gets back to our issue. Because the war with Midian was not the first war that we had. Why did the issue of tefillah kelim wait to this point? What about Mechonas Sichon Va'od? Why the Ramban, the Rishonim on Chumash asked, why by Mechonas Sichon Va'od don't we find the issue of tefillah kelim? So if you look in that third paragraph in source number 15, about halfway down, he says that on mitzvah tefillah, she'ena mitam achilas iser, lo shayit b'zeh tirutzah shal Ramban kamuvan. We're not the answer to what the Ramban said. Whatever Ramban's answer was is that the Mechonas Sichon Va'od only works for Agolas kelim. It doesn't work for tefillah kelim. It may be b'shein hagon mi chapinav, zechel u'vracha, sha'amal l'tarik stak tem, that wanted to answer with the following hakama. The mitzvah tefillah kli, ha'nitvah min akum, t'nagish b'davar. That the chiyuv of tefillah kelim is conditional. The ha'inu, dafka in ba'a kli, l'rishut yisrael, l'rishut ha'nakri, b'li ha'steik rishuyah. It's only if it goes directly from the non-Jew to the Jew, without anyone else getting in between. If the guy dies, and the Kli is there, and no one has it, and then the Jew gets it, so the Kli was after, ain't Sarah Tzila. It's not going to be Chayiv and Tzila. He says, that's why, that's the Mechonas Midian. What happened in Mechonas Midian? The Hefios attacked by Anashim. They didn't kill the women and children. When they killed the fathers, what happened to all of the Kalim? It went to Yerusha, to their families. So it was still the Arabayim up until the very moment when the Jews were able to take it. That's the Mechayiv and Tzilas Kalim. The Jews took it directly from the non-Jews. But when you had Sichon Va'od, where everyone was killed, and everything was left over was just Hefker, and then the Jews come in and there's Zochum in a Hefker, he says, since there's a Hefker for Shos in between, it goes from the guy to Hefker to the Jew, there's no field of Tzilas Kalim in that Torah. That's his sharp answer that he wants to explain the difference why we don't learn it from Sichon Va'od and why we wait till Midyan to learn. He says, now Halacha L'maisa, and the last 4 lines of that paragraph, we'll see that. The Nido Yidon, Yesh Lodun, the Kvar Kodim HaKibush, Nafal Tachat HaYerudim Aleihem, Ubarkul HaNafshom HaKutzlarim. Way before we actually captured these Kalim, the Arabs saw what was happening, they were terrified, and they skipped down, they went to Chutzlarim. Yesh Lodun, the Kodim Yiyush, L'Kibush. that the Yiddish they had on their Kalim of ever retrieving their Kalim preceded our capture of those Kalim. That's the plan. The Nasu Hefker called them Shabbal the Rosh Hashanah. The Kalim became Hefker before the Jews had taken them. The Atakaki saw the Hefker who the Kazaku. Below Abra and Chasim Yashar, Mereshut Anachi, Mereshut Yisrael, it didn't go directly, Shaya Hayahepsik, so Mereshut Hefter, Mereshut Anachi, Mereshut Yisrael, Yishlog into Inkai Mitzvah Tzila. So from that perspective, one could argue that maybe there's no Mitzvah Tzila on these cases. What you see from here is that when you don't have this direct transaction between Jew and non-Jew, that it could be there's no Mitzvah Tzila scaling. Applying it, granted, it's different, because unlike over here where you have three Rishios, by the Gershon is Geyer, it's only one Rishos, meaning, but the bottom line is, you don't have a transference of Rishos from Geyer to Jew, going Kinyan from one person to the other. It could be that that is a Nechayim in Tfilas Kalim. It has to be Doma to play Midyan, and when a Geyer is Geyer, it's not Doma to play Midyan. However, with what he said originally. Well, this is Rishos.
No, because he said beforehand that no matter how you call it, it's still...
Well, right. I mean, that was a svara to say that it should be... Right, that it should be chayiv in tefillah. And then he says, but it could be, for a different reason, it's spot from tefillah. Because the way the transaction happened was indirect. But he says, the truth is, that whole analysis, it's a nice, sharp analysis. I haven't enjoyed very much. The difference between sichon rog and midyan, I thought it was very good. The problem is, it's against the halakha. What happens if you have the halakha is in Shulchan Aruch, if you have a Jew who buys a kli from a non-Jew, but the Jew buys it for non-Seudah purposes. Right? He buys it for whatever reason. He doesn't want to use it for Seudah. And then another Jew buys it from the first Jew, the Tzorech HaSeudah. Is it Chayiv and Tzvilas Kalim? And who's the Chayiv and Tzvilas Kalim on? So clearly the halakha is clear in Shulchan Aruch. The Chayiv of Tzvilas Kalim was on the second Jew. The first Jew was the Chayiv of Tzvilas Kalim. And here what's going on? There's clearly a hefsek in between. It doesn't go directly from Gai to Jew. It goes from Gai to Jew who's not using it for Suda to Jew who is using it for Suda. This happens all the time. You buy from a Jewish store. Right? You buy Kalim from a Jewish store that was made by Gai. It should be weird. Even when you buy Kalim and Eretz Yisrael, people always assume Eretz Yisrael doesn't need Tzvila. You should really read where things are made. So even with the nice Yerushalayim wood on it that looks like a kotel and everything else, you know, there's some little Taiwanese kid who's sitting there painting kotels and everything. It's not always made by Jews. Although I'm told that this is an interesting clip. I was looking at the Lucky Shirin on Tzvilas Kalim, and someone told him that the knives that the challah knives that they have, many of them say made in England. But the way it comes is they send the blade only to Israel, and in Israel they assemble the blade with the handle. So that's already a big shayla, because the kli wasn't usable beforehand as a kli, so the Jew is really the one making the kli, then it wouldn't be chayav, even if it says made in England. So it's probably such a thing, you shouldn't do a kli with a bracha. Probably then do it without a bracha, or bring something else along that requires a bracha. Anyway, this is part of the issue of Gersh and Messiah. It's not something that really... I spend more time on it than I really wanted to, because it's not something that necessarily don't come up in our lives, for us at least. But it's interesting conceptually to understand what the Mechayev of Tzvilas Kalim is. Just one last ta'ara on that issue. The Rav Vadia Seif in the Abia Omer quotes from Rav Eliyahu Kolotskin that says that you don't find Tzvilas Kalim by Matan Torah. That after Matan Torah, one would have anticipated they were all Gedim Shemeskar, all the Gedim of Gedim. So you learn out from Ruth and Matan Torah, right? Those were the two places where we learn out so many of the Gedim of Gedim, and you don't find that there's a Tzvilas Kalim. Perhaps not a Raya, but perhaps a little bit of an illusion that maybe that Gedim should not have to cover all the Kalim upon becoming Gedim. Now, the next issue I want to discuss is using Kalim that were not Tovah, for whatever reason. I'm going to go into the different reasons why they may not have been Tovah. This is a question I get. I don't get that many shilohs like I said, and it's still a small shul, but I've got this shiloh about a half a dozen times so far. So that's a lot to me. The shiloh being that I didn't have time to get to the Kalim, but we used it once. Just once. Right? So that's, this is one of the biggest misconceptions out there, that that you're allowed to use it, as long as you only use it once. That's a misconception. That is not the halakha. So let's see what the halakhas actually are. When it comes to using kelim before tefillah, just to, in case you don't believe me, to show you in Shulchan Aruch, in source number 9, the Ramah says it very clearly. Aval Arisha, the Ramah talks about that case that we spoke about. The Jew buys it from the guy and sells it to another Jew with Tzara Se'uda. The Ramah says, Aval Arisha, an awful ishtamish bol Tzara Se'uda. The first guy, the first Jew who buys it from the guy can't use it with Tzara Se'uda. Afimu derech arai. Even only for a day or for one time, below tefila, without doing tefila first. And this is talking in a case where he bought it for other purposes. He bought the knife for nothing to do with the suda, to cut ropes or something. Completely different purposes. Still, even there, Harai is not allowed to use it if he doesn't do tefila scaling. That's an important halakha. Now, is the food kosher? If he does use it, unlike hadalah kelim, which potentially can ruin food even to the evidence. If you didn't capture the kelim, obviously at the time, usually it's only within 24 hours it's gonna trace things up to the evidence. But unlike that, when it comes to tefillah kelim, to the evidence, we don't assume that it was non-kosher food. However, having said that, Rav Moshe writes that if you have the food in a unpovel dish, you should not eat it directly out of that dish. That's still the kafila. If you eat it out of that dish, then it would still be called a kafila cake. Rather, you should put it into another dish first and eat it from the dish which is povel. Why don't you say, I'm removing it from the dish and putting it in my mouth? That's why I remove it from the dish. No, you can't do that. Eating from the dish, even as you're removing it from your mouth, that's whether it has to be put into another dish first. That's the staff of Moshe Feinstein. When no mitzvah is available, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has an interesting discussion whether the Easter of using it before Tzvivas Kelim, meaning clearly the mitzvah of Tzvivas Kelim is a mitzvah d'oraita, let's say. Okay, let's assume that's how we talk to our culture, showing that it's d'oraita. Is the Easter of using the kli before Tzvivas Kelim an Easter d'oraita? Is that a bitter mitzvah d'oraita? Or do we assume, no, I'll do the mitzvah later. I'm going to get the mitzvah. Tzvivas Kelim, I'm still equal to what I'm doing. And therefore, the Easter of using the kli would only be the rabbanim. So generally we assume the issue of using the kli is only this drabbanim, but Shlomo Zalman pointed out something that I thought was very sharp. Source number 13. Amnon, after Amnon, the issue of Ha'ishtam Shashrach with drabbanim. Even if you were to argue that the issue is only this drabbanim, Kozman Kozer Kishain the Epsharus Ha'ishtamish Lahatil Bebol Ishtamish. That's only if you are unable to bring it to the mikvah, meaning there's no mikvah available. The only mikvah in town is suddenly under mensah. It happens sometimes and it becomes a big problem. Right? The only mikvah in town, though, is water level is low. They have to wait for rain and hope for the best. That's what it's only in the Tzravan. Avalim yachol ahatzil. But if you're able to bring it to the mikvah, mishtamish b'kli below latzilo, and you decide instead you're going to use the kli without being latzilis, you violated Israel Tehmanat Torah in Yahweh Tovol Shashah. If you could have been Tovol the Kli, where did he get this idea? It's very simple. The Lotei Mahakins, you don't say that. So a person spends his whole life saying, yeah, I'm still going to do the mitzvah, I'm still going to do the mitzvah. And at the right level, he's fine. Or you tell his brother after him, you tell him, I'm not going to do it, my grandchildren will do the Tzilas Kelim on this Kli, if they still have it. This book is lost on most of Eventually, no one uses Tzilas Kelim, meaning obviously nothing is going to happen. It's not like this is a major concern that people are going to leave Kelim for the grandchildren to be public. But he's saying, on a theoretical level, if a person can get out of the midst of Tzilas Kelim on his alright level and have no issues alright to himself. So it doesn't make sense that the mitzvah of d'oraita that you never really have to fulfill on the d'oraita level. So it has to be that as soon as you have an opportunity to fulfill it, and you don't fulfill it, using that kli is when it becomes an israfei mida oraita. It's only a drabanon if you have no other chance. And again, the issue may be an issue of suffering, right? What happens if you have a kli that you're not sure whether it requires tefillah or not? So maybe there's more room to be makil, the Shas of God, maybe there's more room to be makil if it's only in the Siddur Rabbanan. If you had no opportunity to be tovel, but if you had the opportunity to tovel it, so maybe there's a lot less room to be makil. That's the finish of Rishon Lezalman. Now when it comes to borrowing kelim, the Gemara is very clear in the sense of a bazaar, not even implied to the time constraint. The Gemara says you borrow kelim from a non-Jew. We do it all the time. You go into a restaurant that's owned by a non-Jew, either a kosher restaurant that's owned by a non-Jew. There are plenty of kosher restaurants that are owned by non-Jews, and many Chinese restaurants are not owned by Jews. And they just know the kosher market, and they give up all the whatever Chinese food is really supposed to be made at them, and it became the kosher market. Right, so if you go into a restaurant and they have kelim, they don't need this meal. I remember the food store, one of the food stores in town, before Pesach, my mother told him that if he wants to do good business, he should take a horseradish and grind it up and sell this package of ground up horseradish. He thought it was crazy. Who was going to buy that? He had no idea. It was his first year in town. And he went out and bought a machine, a special machine that grinds it up really well. And my mother said, you have to give it to me. She ran to the midst of the recovery. Now, luckily, that was not necessary, right? It wasn't required to deal with Caleb. The owner was a non-Jew. He's a guy. So it doesn't require to deal with Caleb. And therefore would not be a problem anyway, right? That's what it belongs to a non-Jew. Ironically, if you're in a Jewish restaurant and they haven't been double the Caleb, so then you have a much bigger problem, right? From a Jew, Tosus points out, so since there is a thief of Jewish Caleb, you're not really allowed to use those Caleb. So this is the Shiloh that I mentioned before. A lot of the post-Crusade was very, very common a number of years ago, and it's still somewhat common, I guess, and still happens. Someone doesn't know the halakha so well, you know, people aren't aware. Very often this happens with Bali Tshuva. People become Bali Tshuva, so they finally convince their family to kasher their house. And now to tell them that Tefillas Kelim is going to be a whole other battle, and they're not quite ready for it. So all the food's kosher already, but they have to wait till their parents go on vacation until they can go and bring all the kelim to the mikvah without anyone noticing. Right? There's a nice thing to call you on things like this happen, that people are in these sticky situations. So they're not allowed to use the kelim. Their parents, you know, they're most inefficient, the cash of the entire house. And now you're not going to eat here because of because we didn't dip it in the water, the 40 saw of water, of dirty water. So what's the halakha in such a case? So Rav Moshe has an interesting thought. Rav Moshe in the Tshuva writes, it's in the mind, it's almost again, we're not going to read inside because of time constraints, I'll just let you know it's there. Rav Moshe in, it's in source number, I don't know, what? Yeah, there's a lot of emotions. The emotion source number 12 there actually is. He talks about eating in a hotel where they weren't told that we came in, so you see, he says the following thing. He says, the kli could be that it's only a violation of the issue of eating from a kli that hasn't been told of if the kli is essential to your meal, to your eating. Meaning, a piece of chicken, it's not proper to put it directly on the table and eat it off the table, but if it tastes just the same, it wouldn't be that much that difficult to eat it. Soup would be very hard to eat without a bowl, right? So he says when it comes to a liquid, something that you actually need the kli, without the kli, you're not going to have much of a meal. Right? So he says in such a case, you can't eat from the bowl without the kli. But when you have a food that's a double gush, it's a solid piece of food, and it could have been on the table, it's just not properly. You know, you haven't done that since yeshiva days, ever since they used plates. But then it's, then he holds that maybe you can be mental, and you can use those kelim. The problem that he doesn't raise is, what about the fork and the knife? Right? I mean, that makes a big difference in the way you eat it. I mean, granted, you know, forgetting all modern etiquette, you know, it wouldn't be that different an experience if you were cutting something on the tabletop or if you were on a plate. But sticking your hands in it and using a fork and knife is a very different experience, right? It's much easier to cut the pieces of the size you like them with a fork and knife than when you're ripping it apart with your hands. Right? So it's, that he doesn't address. But the fork and knife is not tovel, so that could be a bigger problem. And usually that's a bigger problem than the plates anyway. The plates are usually China anyway. Right? Very often they're China or glazed. China will discuss a little bit later. Right? The fork and knife are metal. That's there's no way out of that. So that doesn't really solve the problem so much. It's a nice cup, and if you buy it, great, but it's not really, it doesn't really help so much practically. The Soloveitchik had a different idea. I saw this quote in the name of other Gedolei Apostolim in the Sefer Tefillah Kelim, quoted from other postim who I am not familiar with, Sefer Beis Avi, I think, which was Beis Avi, as well from Borough Park, I believe, and of Salvation, was having the same idea. And that is that when you meet at somebody's house, generally, or in a restaurant for that matter, generally you're not a sholel. Tosha says when you borrow a kli from a Jew, it requires tefillah kelim, you're not allowed to eat from it without tefillah kelim. You eat at somebody's house, you're not a sholel. Why? How do I know this? What happens if I break something? I drop the glass on the floor in the trailer. A sholel's a borrower, right? I borrow something of yours and I break it, so what would I have to do? Clearly I would have to pay you back for it. If I'm at your house and I drop a glass and it breaks and my kid knocks over a glass, or I'm at a hotel and the glass at the table breaks, they're not going to charge me for it. Right, most of those items are legal. They wouldn't charge the guests for something like that. I often tell the story of my son when he was 3 years old. We got this fancy hotel in Italy for Pesach, and they insisted on giving him glasses every time, a glass. And every time they gave him a glass, he took it and promptly smashed it down on the floor, broke it into a million pieces. They brought him another glass. And they didn't charge us. We could have had a bill with, who knows, but they didn't charge us, and that's what they're most of that. So that's not a din of a sholel. You don't have a din of a borrower or a salvation status. You're using his kelim, right? So it's his issue. It's not your issue. And that's perhaps the ekspavara to be sometimes to be making. That's in terms of that particular issue. Now the next issue to deal with is what types of utensils, and this is very nogea l'maisa, obviously, what types of utensils actually require tefillah and what does not require tefillah. So the Torah, when it talks about kashrut and kelim and tefillah kelim, makes mention of six types of metal, and it says that those, and clearly the tefillah kelim is midoraisa, covering those six types of metal, gold, silver, copper, whatever they are, you know, those six types of metal are clearly chayav and tefillah, the six types of metal that they were familiar with back in the days when the Jews were in the desert, right, the six types of metal that they had discovered and learned how to use properly and cultivate and be able to get and to obtain properly. So those types of metal clearly are chayav midoraisa. So the first question you have to ask is, what about every other type of metal? They didn't have aluminum. So are aluminum, kelim, chayav midoraisa? Whenever there's a din in matachas, whenever there's a din in metal, does it apply to aluminum as well? Does it apply to other metals? Right, every couple of years they come up with another metal that they're able to combine different things and make metal. Right, so is it? I didn't know the rest of chemistry, but that much I can tell you. Right, so are those metals going to be high in tefillah kelim, or they're not going to be high in tefillah kelim on a d'oraisa level? So the Rav Moshe has a tiddush where Rav Moshe says clearly the Torah knew. The Torah has this, you know, Baruch Hashem wrote the Torah. He has this broad perspective of past, present, and future. There is no past, present, and future in his world. It's not like he didn't know what he put here. He knew that all the elements and all the metals were here. And yet still, when writing the Torah, said, these six types of metal require tefillah. Says Rav Moshe, apparently he left out the others for a reason. Because the others are not going to be chayav in tefillah.
But that makes sense going back to the dishes. Because
he doesn't have to almost walk out where it's a little. No, but the problem is, it's not chayav in tefillah on the right level. Even Rav Moshe says, still going to be chayav on the drabot level. The Gemara says that glass, pashup shot of the Gemara, some say glass is alright also, but pashup shot of the Gemara says that glass kelim, the only chayav to be told to meet the Rabbanon. What drove the Rabbanon to be gozer on glass kelim that they should require tefillah kelim? Because it shares a similar property to metal, even though the Gemara Shabbos went recently in Dapyomi seems to say that glass kelim are more like kli cheres, which they are in certain ways, they're more like kli cheres. But regarding tefillah, we treat them like metal kelim because, like metal, when there's a hole in the metal kli, you can melt it together, right? Glass also can be fixed in that way. Not as easily, but it can be fixed in that way. Kli cheres can never be fixed in that way. So that's why the chachamim were gozer, tefillah kelim on glass as well. So if Moshe says, even I who hold that other matechos on the types of metal are not chayvim to be on a d'oraisa level, but they're no worse than glass, right? They certainly share that quality with glass and are going to be chayvim to be on a d'oraisa level. This second motion is very nogea l'maisa for tumas kohanim. Right? The halacha is that, we're going to discuss this in the Shabbos afternoon share in a couple of weeks, the halacha is that by tumas kohanim, that whenever you have a davar on the kabel tumah, it's not closely prepared tumah. In other words, anything that can itself become tameh, when it goes over a dead body, the tumah goes up, hits that item, makes it tameh, and continues to go up. So let's say you have a person standing a coin, standing on top of that item, and that's Makapal Tumah, and the dead body over here, right on the bottom, so the Tumah goes straight up through the item that's Makapal Tumah, and is entirely the coin. If, however, you have something that's not Makapal Tumah, and that meets the proper size requirements of that much by that much, Tefachai Tefach, but it's not that, it doesn't have to be that big, something that's not Makapal Tumah, and you have a coin standing on top of it, the Tumah goes straight up, hits a brick wall right here, and fills the whole area in between the mace and the Kli. But anything on top of it, the Tumah doesn't continue. The Tumah stops right there. If the coin is on top of that, he's okay. If a coin, let's say, where do you ever have a coin standing on top of something, and the mace underneath, you have a coin flying on an airplane, right? So the coin is on top of the bottom of the plane, so it's the same as Makapal Tumah, coin becomes something that's got a big problem when they fly over the cemetery. Or, let's say, if there's something that's forming mastic between the coins on a mace on the plane, which could become a bigger issue anyway. But let's assume the mace, they're flying over a cemetery. If the plane is Makapal Tumah, then the coin's going to have a big problem. If the plane is not Makapal Tumah, the coin's home free. Right? Doesn't have to worry about anything. Says Rav Moshe, according to my shita, where most planes are made mostly of aluminum, apparently, or some other types of metals that are made of gold. They're not made of the metals that are mentioned in the Torah. So if that's the case, Rav Moshe says, they're not really Makapal Tumah. So they stop the Tumah, coins on top, he's okay. Right? That's the Chiddush of Rav Moshe to be matir, coin and flying airplanes. He just does apply in other areas of halacha as well. Now, that's when it comes to metal. So that's not so remarkable because even things that are chayv in tefillah, midrash rabbanan, you make a bracha on the tefillah. It's another misconception. People think the cover of glass that there's no bracha. No, things that you're chayv in tefillah on a rabbanan level, you do make a bracha. You only don't make a bracha when it's a suffix whether there's any tefillah at all. Right? So metals clearly require tefillah. Glass, as we said, requires tefillah. Machlokes in the rabbanan derives from the overwhelming majority of the folks who assume that the chayv tefillah on glass is only the Rabbanon, but nevertheless, as we said, you still make a bracha. Plastic poses an interesting challenge for the poskim. Because here you had something, this is also just it's an interesting study in the development of halacha. Because at some point in history, Rabbanon had the power to come along and say, you have to be covered glass because it shares a quality with metal. What was that quality? That when there's a break, you can fix it by melting it together. Right? They didn't have plastic back then. Clearly, had they had plastic, they would have included plastic in the Gzeira. Right? Because clearly plastic resembles metal even more in that respect, in that you can melt it together, you can just melt it and make it back into one sleeve. Much easier to fix than glass is to fix. So clearly had it been around, they would have been closer on plastic. But it wasn't around, so they weren't closer. So now what do we do with that? Is it included in the Alef of Tzvil Kevin, the Tzvil Kevin? So there are post-skin that believe that, yes, that since they clearly, it fits the bill of what they were looking to be gozer on, that we should include an halacha of Tzvil. However, it seems that the overwhelming majority of post-skin reject that. The overwhelming majority of post-skin say, look, our luck, they were gozer, you know, they were gozer what they were gozer. Thank God they didn't have plastic back then. It's similar, because remember we discussed the issue of kidneys before Pesach. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about kidneys, someone asked him if peanuts are kidneys. And Rosh said, no, they didn't have peanuts, they were never going to have peanuts in the Middle Ages. When they started this minhag of kidneys, in Ashkenaz, they started this minhag of kidneys, they never included peanuts, because they simply didn't have it. So peanut oil, it used to be that it wasn't that bad to use peanut oil. Well, now we're mocking a lot more things than people used to be mocking over. At Rosh Hashanah, peanut oil is even better, because it's only it's only May kidneys. It's not even the real kidneys itself. Whatever it is, though, that the Rav Moshe says, strictly speaking, la halacha, we'd be looking to use on Pesach. We looked at it wasn't included in the original minhag. And if Sablowski pointed out, if you take that to its logical conclusion, it doesn't seem that corn was really included in the original grid of kidneys either. It was really only on beans, right? So that would make corn syrup mutter Pesach. If you really followed of Moshe's tshuva to logical conclusion. We don't, and we ask the corn syrup, but we assume it's kidneys, and it's unclear why potatoes we're okay with, and, corn syrup we're not. But, you know, these things the way Minhag Yisrael shakes out, that's the way it ends. It's not dealing with the din, it's dealing with the minhag, so that you can just rely on what happens in terms of how the minhag develops, as opposed to when dealing with the din. But that is a somewhat similar issue in terms of the development of halacha, that at a certain point in history, if the item was there, it was included in the gzera / minhag. If it was not there, it was not included in the gzera or minhag. So most people that I know of do not have the minhag to double plastic. I would never recommend, I mean, I don't tell people that they have to trouble themselves to double plastic. Some people do, they're going to make the... Well, that's one about like plastic cups, like throwaway plastic cups, like the heavy plastic. I will discuss throwaway items, chai tami.
Could the comparison be made between the clay ceramic, between the metal kalem and glass?
Yeah, that's the catch.
As a, because the number of mushroom glassware
was... Oh, you're saying on that one. Yeah, meaning one could argue, I didn't see that in the post, but I was thinking that as I was saying it also, one could argue that maybe they would not have been Gozar plastic because it's not
as exposed.
But do we find that they weren't Gozar on the double question? I don't know if we find that. I don't know if we find that. I don't think we do. Okay, this is what to talk about. Lamaisa, you don't have to worry about plastic. Glorious China was a huge machlokas in the post, because China is not just the raw China, they put a glaze over it to make it smooth on top, and so that it doesn't get ruined. The china will get ruined by the food, it gets disgusting. If the glaze, the glass protects it. The glass, in reality, is not bolea. Right? The kosher said it is bolea, and that it does suck in some of the food, but it's actually not. It's completely, that's the godless of it. So some of the folks in our kosher discussion is that, like, that if it's glazed china, it's really a glass utensil, should be chayav in tefila. However, there are many folks that point out, as Moshe pointed out, that there's a big difference between the glazed china that they were talking about 2 centuries ago and the glazed china that they're talking about today. It used to be that literally half the kli was glass, that it was a thick layer of glass. Now they take some sort of spray, they spray it on, it's like this tiny thin layer of glass that's over it, and it hardly makes the bulk or the major part of the kli. So Moshe thinks that glazed china does not require to. That you find machlokas in the post. And a lot of the post can think that even our glazed china, you do have to take the mitzvah without a bracha. The Moshe is asking that you don't have to trouble with Rabbi Kendler. He used to teach the Tzvila Kalim to Smicha students in YU, and he was always fond of saying that he believes very strongly by his Shmer's shitas, and he used to say that that every chassan who gets married and they bring all the china to the mikvah shows that he's such an amarat, he should have passed the shidduch meikara because of his amarat by bringing the china to the mikvah. Anyway, there are major folks who say you should, right? But personally, I didn't. If anyone's interested, I know anyone would. Next, Karel and Corningware are also, that's a lot tougher. Because Karel and Corningware, the postman, are not really sure what to make of it. Is it Karel or is it Karel? So it's unique because it doesn't break, except when it breaks, it really breaks. Meaning it doesn't, when it breaks, it's not into 2 pieces. It's in like 3,000 pieces, but it doesn't break easily. So they're not sure whether to consider this glass, to consider this kind of, it's a machlokas haposkim. Rabbi Sabalowski said that he asked Rabbi Willard, and oddly, at least in my mind, Rabbi Willard said, Tavik Rabbanu Makula. At worst, it's glass, Tavik Rabbanu, you have to be covered. Again, we discussed before that maybe the whole concept of Tavik Rabbanu Makula doesn't apply to Tzvilas Kalim. But anyway, I'll take that stack and I'll run with it. As a prolonged morning where probably, and most is the suffix, so if you don't put it anyway, you may as well, but it could be that it's not, it does not require tefillah at all anyway. Disposable utensils we once discussed in the past when we were discussing making kiddush on disposable cups. Now, there are two assumptions that have to be made before you can assume a disposable utensil would be chayav in tefillah scale. Assumption number one, or issue number one that you have to deal with, is there a direct link between an item being mekabel tuma, having the ability to be mekabel tuma, and an item being chayav in tefillah kelim? Meaning, can we say that if something is not mekabel tuma, automatically it's not chayav in tefillah kelim? And if it is mekabel tuma, no, we wouldn't say that, but if it is mekabel tuma, it is chayav in tefillah kelim. Do we make that link? And then the obvious next issue you have to deal with is, are disposable utensils mekabel tuma? Very rarely do we have to discuss whether something is mekabel tuma or not. So there are a few areas of Malacha where it's still no Gael Lamais, even though we're not knowing Tuman Zahra, laws of Tuman Zahra to the fullest extent. So one of them is this issue of Tzilas Kelim. So if Moshe writes that only those Kelim that are actually Mekabel Tumah need Tzvila, meaning issue number one, only if it's Mekabel Tumah do you need Tzvila, and he says disposable cups are not Mekabel Tumah, meaning he has a raya from a Mishnah somewhere we discussed the last time, could download the I wrote up that article from the website we discussed last time, that Rav Moshe holds, he has a raya based on the Mishnah that anything disposable is not going to be Mekabel Tumah. He says, it's still called the Kli, it's just not Mekabel Tumah. Meaning, to use it for the Tzilas Yadayim, it's called the Kli. To use it for Kiddush, it's called the Kli, but he held that you shouldn't use it for Kiddush anyway because it's like a broken Kiddush cup, it's so cheap, it's so worthless, that's a different halacha than Dinei Kiddush. So it's called a Kli, but it's not Mekabel Tumah. If it's not Mekabel Tumah, it's not Chayav and Tzvila. That Kiddush of Rav Moshe has relevance to Hilchos Nida as well. Now, a lot of Hilchos Nida is that a Kesem, normally the stains, summon, are found in one of two places. Either it's found on underwear, which is Mekabel Tumah, it's a baguette, or it's found on toilet paper. Right? So, which gets iffy, it's a very similar Shaila, but one of the major hurdles that you overcome is that if it's a kesem, if you're sure that it's only a kesem, then it's not a gasha, that's been found in toilet paper, so the postman discussed, is paper mekabel tumah or is it not mekabel tumah? Huge discussion in the postman a couple hundred years ago. Rav Moshe came along and said, paper nowadays is cheap and it's disposable. Remember, it's not mekabel tumah. Anything that's chad pami, you use once and then you throw it out, it's not mekabel tumah. So Rav Moshe held that toilet paper is not Mekabel Tumah, and therefore it's not Mekabel Tsumim. Again, if it actually, if the Shiloh comes up, you have to ask, because it's not always a Kesem. Very often when there's something found on toilet paper, you have to worry about the fact that there may have been what we might call a Hargasha, and it may be a Shiloh Midah D'Oraisa. So it's not that cut and dry, but if it purely is a Kesem, so we have what to be tzomek on with that issue. The final issue is electric utensils. I wish I had more than a minute and a half to do it. But the final issue is electric utensils. Many sheets have been posted. Chatzos Yaakov had the sharpest chat, which all the posting reject. Some in very strong language, and the Chassidus calls it Hevel and Shtus and other nice names. But the Chatzos Yaakov had the following chat. We said he starts with Rav Moshe's ha'ara that if it's not Mekabel Tumah, it's not going to be fighting Tzilas Kelim. They said anything that's mechubar l'karka, it's part of your house, it's not mekabel tumah. It's part of connected to the ground. So he says an electric utensil only works if it's plugged into the wall. It becomes part of the house. It only works when it's mechubar. Granted, it's easy to detach it, but then it doesn't work anymore. So since it only works when it's mechubar, then it's been a mechubar l'karka, and it doesn't require tzilas kelim. Now it's his chav. All the other folks were rejected. Rav Moshe had a chiddush. They can view the electric part of the utensil and the base kibble, the part that actually holds the food, is two separate utensils, even though they're attached to each other, and normally you have to dip a whole utensil in, but you can view them as two separate utensils and only dip the part that doesn't contain the electric element that holds the food, only dip the part that holds the food into the mikvah. Most kelim doesn't really matter anyway. An electric urn is getting all over the electricity. If you stick the part that holds the, it's very hard to work it out, that you only, so it doesn't help practically that much. Rav Shlomo Zalman had the idea that maybe you can give the kli to a Jewish electrician who can take it apart in a way that you would not be able to put it back together yourself, have him put it back together, then he made the kli, it's a Jewish-made kli, it's not chayav and tzvila. And what most folks can suggest is bring it to the mikvah, dip it in the mikvah, wait a few days, let it dry out, and nothing will happen to you. The kli will work fine and and everything will be fine. Everyone I've spoken to that's worked for except for me. I brought my urn to the mikvah and never worked again. So do that your own. I think I'm going to